on today's Run to the Top podcast.
I know that my best racing is like at the 50K, 50 mile, maybe 100K, but since I've sort of done so many of those, like I kind of like to do the things I'm not great at because it's more of a challenge. Like even though I've won a 100 miler, I don't think I'm good at them.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Michelle Barton has run some totally gnarly races, including Badwater 135 from Death Valley to Mount Whitney, the Javelina 100, a 100-mile self-proclaimed desert trail run costume party, Caballo Blanco joining the Tarahumara Indians in Mexico, and she has also set over 24 course records. I was introduced to Michelle's running through a chapter she wrote in Chicken Soup for the Soul about her experience running Badwater 135 and the extreme challenges she dealt with to finish the race. But she did finish the race. We talked to Michelle about how her love of the outdoors led to her running and how her running has taken on bigger and longer challenges over the years. Welcome, Michelle Barton.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor, Stephanie. So great to be here today.
Well, thank you. And as you know, when we were talking before we started this interview, we're both Mexico aficionados. So I definitely want to talk to you more about Mexico. But I always have a few general questions at the beginning of the interview. So where were you born? Where are you living now? And what is your current favorite race distance?
I was born in Newport Beach, California, and I currently live in Laguna Niguel, California. And my favorite race distance, I would say, would be 50K, because that is like the fastest distance I can run. And then I can also go biking and swimming after the race if I do a 50K. And my favorite type of race would be something that is not repetitive, like not a loop course and not really an out and back, like something that's sort of past the bridge or across the creek. You don't have to pass it again 25 times.
All right. Interesting. So what got you started running? And when did you transition to ultra long distances? Two different questions there, but definitely related.
Definitely. I started running right after I had my daughter, which was in the year 2000, and my dad had bought me a jogging stroller. And so he would just come over to my house a couple times a week and we would go on runs together. And my dad has been a runner since he was 30 years old, doing marathons and the typical type of road running. And then basically my dad transitioned into trails when he was older, like around 60, because he had a friend named Baz Holly, who's a race director, and he went on these amazing races, Yosemite, like Shadow of the Giants 50K, and he put on races nearby where I live. It's called Saddleback Mountain. He put on a trail series. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to join my dad for some of these races. But back in my childhood, my dad really got me into loving nature, mountains, and the outdoors, because we would go on an annual backpacking trip to Yosemite every year. And that was just so much fun for me. Like, we would hike very far and we'd be gone about a week. And we started when I was probably 6 years old, but he always made it very fun. And sometimes he would let me bring friends. So I love those mountains, the Sierra Nevada, so much. I named my daughter Sierra after that. So I would say my it all goes back to my dad, pretty much. Like, I don't know what I would be doing if it wasn't for my dad taking me on all these amazing things.
That's an interesting transition, and also something that, at least indirectly, I can totally, you know, understand, because I did a lot of rock climbing when I was younger. And so I would go to Yosemite every spring and we would hang out in Camp 4 and do a lot of rock climbing.
Oh, Camp 4, that's epic.
And like you, you know, I used running because I'd go on long climbs or whatever. And then if I still had energy, then I'd go for a run to stay in shape.
Wow.
So we have a lot in common.
We do. There's something very special about Yosemite. I just love it so much.
I know. It's a really cool place. And now that they have races there as well, is the race that you do, is that actually in Yosemite or is it outside of it or what?
Well, it's very interesting. I don't allow races in the park.
That's what I thought.
This race director he's in the know somehow. And of course, like part is outside the park. Mm-hmm. It's like a fish camp.
Yeah.
And then part of it is in the park where it's through like this magic loop where you run through the 3,000-year-old sequoias, through the grizzly giants. So I would say like 1.5 miles of it is actually in this majestic, beautiful part of the park. They allow it because they sort of limit the amount of runners to 150, right. And mm-hmm. they make sure they don't tear up the trails. And this race has been around for, I think, 25 or 30 years now. So it's pretty established.
Wow. Well, it's so cool that you did all of this stuff initially with your dad too, and that he got you interested and actually started you as a runner.
Absolutely. Yesterday, it's called Mount Baldy Run to the Top, and he was number one in his age group. The other two 80-year-olds didn't finish. They turned back halfway, but he made friends with them anyway. And he climbed Mount Whitney on Friday and ran Trans Rockies 120-mile race last week with Gordy Ainsley, the founder of the 100 called Western States, and that was his running partner. So he is on a roll. He made his 80th birthday year something very gnarly and special and crazy.
Wow, your dad must be amazing. I know. I was thinking we really should have him on the podcast. And if I'd thought about it enough ahead of time or had the time, I might have asked you to do it together, because that would be a really maybe we'll do that in the future.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
So you've set a bunch of course records. I had 24 in my notes. Now tell me about some of those course records.
Oh, well, I'm very, very proud of one in particular. It's called the Leona Divide 50 miler. It's on the PCT. And that race has been going on for many, many years. It's another just sort of classic. And I sort of had the race of my life. And I mean, some of my times are like sort of Scott Jurek and Carl Melster, like there's different runners that have run that course. And I mean, even the women, like I really look up to Chrissy Mail and Devin Helms, and like there's a lot, and I actually beat all those times and my record still stands from 2009. So I'm super proud of that. I really do like the 50 mile distance, but it took me a while to learn because a few years before I ran the Leona Divide, that was my second attempt at a 50 miler. Mm-hmm. And there was a medic that helped me. I was just wavering in and out on the trail. Like it felt like I was just drunk or something. And I guess I didn't take enough sodium because it was like raining and hailing and I was just freezing. And so the medic sat me down in a chair and had me take salt pills. And then he promised to finish like the last 7 miles with me. And then I finished, but I learned a lot. And then I went back like 3 years later to win the race.
Wow.
So that's happened at a few of my races where I've either dropped out and I got so mad at myself that I came back the next year and won.
Yeah.
That happened even at Javelina 100 miler where I dropped out the first year and then I learned from all my mistakes and I came back and won. And I beat all the guys.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So when you dropped out, why did you drop out? And then what did you change to be able to win it the next year?
Well, at Javelina, it was more like I didn't have the experience of running 100 milers. Mm-hmm. It was my second attempt and my feet just felt like they were like the arches were ripping apart. My quads were shot. I just you know, when you are throwing up and you just feel terrible, you think that maybe you can't get it back together, but right. you can if you just take the time to kind of like regroup and take care of yourself. Just maybe sit down for like 20 minutes if you have time, if you're ahead of the clock, and get some like maybe soup broth and maybe change your shoes and socks. Or there's just things, a lot of it is mental in the later parts of a 100 miler.
I
would say for like specifically Leona Divide, what I fixed was I definitely was much more aware of taking salt stick every 45 minutes. Mm. It was hot or get behind on my electrolytes.
Yeah.
Like before I saw, I just thought, oh, I don't need it. It's cold
right.
out, but you
right.
do. So I just tweaked my nutrition and tweaked sort of my attitude, because everything is going to hurt anyway. So you just got to kind of like keep positive and just kind of be able to differentiate if it's destructive pain or productive pain. Like if there's really an injury or it's really just like, oh, your muscles hurt. So that's normal.
There must be so much going on in your head and
yeah.
like you said, kind of learning the tricks, like having the right hydration, eating at the right time, maybe even
yeah.
being willing to stop and just take a little time out for yourself, or even cool off if there's a creek or something, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
That's
cooling
gotta
off,
be
yeah.
That's gotta be part of the experience of practicing it, making mistakes, learning from those mistakes, and then trying new things until you're fine-tuning a lot of the different aspects of your racing.
Yep. And that's what I did at Badwater. I had to stop a couple times to kind of let my body temperature regulate and cool off. And I was Dean Karnazzi's pacer in 2009 at Badwater, and I saw him. It was very late into the race. And, you know, you get tired and you have your very, very low points at Badwater. And he just sat in a chair with his feet up. We put towels on his legs and he just took like a 10-minute nap just to kind of regroup. And then he was perfectly fine.
Wow.
So even though you maybe stop for a little bit, it doesn't mean your race is over. You can get it together and move on and you might feel much, much better. Yeah.
I want to, we're going to go into Badwater now. And you wrote an article in Chicken Soup for the Soul about your Badwater experience. That's how I learned about you initially. Let me read this just short piece on Badwater so people know the details of it. And then I want you to tell us about your experience as a racer, not as an assistant helping someone. So the Badwater Ultra Marathon describes itself as the world's toughest foot race. It is a 135-mile, 217-kilometer course starting at 279 feet below sea level in the Badwater Basin in California's Death Valley and ending at an elevation of 8,360 feet, 2,548 meters at Whitney Portal, the trailhead to Mount Whitney. So 135 miles with all of this other stuff going on, temperature, distance, all of that.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit more about the race itself and why it was such a tough one for you, but how and why you persevered and finished.
Well, I respected the distance and I really seriously, I trained in the sauna every day for 7 weeks, an hour a day. And you basically go in the sauna until you just want to pass out. And I was feeling great with the heat once I got to Badwater, but my feet and my ankles were sort of the main issue. Like even from the very start, you do have a crew that sort of takes care of you. They give you ice and water and they put ice in your hat and give you ice bandanas. And sometimes you have a sprayer, like somebody spraying your neck down or your back to kind of cool you off. And so the problem was the water was seeping into my socks and shoes. And for some reason at Badwater, it just is like squish.
Ew.
It's out. And so I was getting bad blisters and really bad blisters on my ankles because the sun was just beating down. That year had been particularly hot. It was 128 degrees. And from the pavement, it was like more like almost 200 degrees. And so I had to really, really stop and have John Voss, like the best foot care doctor in the world of ultra running. He took 45 minutes to patch me up. He wouldn't pop my blisters because some were blood blisters. And by that time it was just, it was so painful. So my feet did not longer fit into my shoes.
Yeah.
So I had to go into my, like my crew chief shoes, which were way bigger than mine. And then I finished, but I just had to take that time out to regroup and get worked on. I definitely would finish without doctor's help. It was just too painful. And it happens so fast, how you just get, even though I was applying sunscreen, how you're supposed to every 30 minutes, it just would sweat away and I would just get cooked. And plus I have red hair and sort of fair skin. So it was just worse for me, I think.
And like, what was it that made you finish? You know, what was it that made you want to finish? Because I know, I mean, with that kind of pain and when you were really struggling, I think you were at like maybe 80 miles or something. I mean, you had a lot of race left.
Yeah, I was like, I would say from mile 80 to 96 was terrible. Like I was averaging 1 mile per hour, like hobbling downhill.
Uh-huh.
And so at that point, my crew just said, okay, we need to regroup. But I just figured, like, I had 5 people come out for me. They 5 days off work and out of their lives to help me. My dad came out. He drove out to see me finish. I wanted to kind of show my daughter that, like, I mean, my daughter was young at the time. She was 9. But just to show that you can do amazing things. Like, I gave a talk in her school and her class. And I wanted to finish because you train all year, maybe more than a year for the race. You spend a lot of money. It's not free. It's over $1,000 to enter the race. And then you spend probably 3 more thousand for everything else, like the hotels. And so it was, and I knew it wasn't like a race that I would be doing every year because it's just not possible, even though it's not far from my house. It's still a huge endeavor. And it's hard on your body. So I just, with all that in mind, I just felt that like there was no real reason to quit. So I had all these people behind me that cared about me, that wanted me to finish. So, I mean, even if I walked the whole rest of the way I did, but I actually felt fantastic after I took some time off and got back sort of on the course running. It was like a whole nother person, which is very weird. And I never expected that. Like I was dancing up the last few miles and in a great mood, like all the pain went away. That's the weirdness about ultras. Like, you know, the pain will come, you know, it will go and it will move around, but you don't know when. You just have to stay positive and stay strong to know like it will get better if you're in that slump.
That's got to come from experience and, you know, that you persevered on something. What was the longest race that you had done before Badwater 135?
My longest race was the Rocky Raccoon 100 mile and the Javelina 100 mile. I've done that.
35 miles more isn't, I mean, it's a lot, obviously, but it was something that you felt you could handle. So it was really all of the other pieces that came together that made it so challenging.
Yeah, I would say it's mostly the pavement because I don't run on pavement. I don't really enjoy it, but the pavement there was very sort of softer feeling to me because I think it's cooked so much. It didn't feel so hard. Mm. And I think just like that running like on the road in that heat is just the most brutal thing. Yeah. Ugh.
I mean, I've heard that people run like on the white line because it's cooler.
It's not a story. You definitely have to, because you feel it's so much cooler. Like some people's shoes become unglued after the first 10K because they fall apart. Like, I mean, you definitely feel much better running on the white line. Like I was even trying to run on the side in the dirt, like on off the pavement, because the pavement was just horrible.
Oh.
Yeah.
And what did you wear? You know, what you wear must be so important.
Yeah, I wore like a some shorts that were really breathable and lightweight. And I wore like a white technical t-shirt and just like a jog bra. But I had like one of those ice hats and ice bandanas on all the time. And I wore like some sort of compression sleeves over my calves. But it is important. I would almost cover my whole body. So my ankles are, it would just be more protected.
Yeah. Now, were you wearing long sleeves when you said you had on a white shirt?
No, I wasn't wearing long sleeves. Mm-hmm. And my arms were fine, but...
Well, congratulations on finishing that. And for anybody who wants to read a recap of your experience, then it is in that book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. And lots of other stories in that book as well that are very interesting. But yours was one of the ones that really popped for me and said, let's see if we can talk to this woman.
Thank you. And for people that might think that bad water is too much, the race director, Chris Kossman, also has another race. It's called Badwater Salton Sea, and it's sort of like a mini Badwater. It's in the Anza Borrego Desert. It's the same format where you have a crew car. It's very hot. It's like over 100 degrees, and there's three major climbs. But instead of 135 miles, it's 82 miles. And the fun part is you get to run it with a partner the whole way, like a teammate, even one. But that was a great race. Like, me and my partner won, and we broke the course record. And that was a much easier, I would say, just because of the distance and the heat wasn't as terrible, but very fun. And the course was also road and trail combined, which was pretty neat.
Now, that's called Badwater Salton Sea. I was going to ask you about that because there's actually a few different Badwater races, right?
Yes, there's a... Actually, another one has just been added. But yeah, right now there is three Badwater races.
And this one that you won, you set the course record what year?
That was 2015, and that was the Badwater Salton Sea.
Mm-hmm. And it hasn't been broken yet, right?
Not that I know of.
All right. And what was the time? Was it a combined time? Is that how they do it? Do you have to run with your partner? How does that work?
For that one, you run it the whole way with your partner. Uh-huh. You can't get away from your partner or they'll disqualify you.
I see.
And we finished in 17 hours and 1 minute.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations on that one as well. My gosh, these times, I mean, it really is a different kind of racing, a different kind of pushing yourself than just a standard marathon.
Oh yeah. You definitely, it's more of, like you said, it's so much mental because you know, like, even if you're prepared and you train and run 100-mile weeks, like for example, for this Badwater Salton Sea, I took it super serious and I was running up to 150 miles a week, like for 2 weeks. It seems like you can never be like completely prepared, like be able to solve on the fly along the way. And that makes it fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you and I were also talking about Mexico before the interview started, before the recording started, and you have run in the race that, of course, came out of or was, I think it was started with the Born to Run phenomenon, Caballo Blanco race in Mexico. Tell us more about that race. I live in Mexico. I have been in Chihuahua. I've been in the Copper Canyon. I love that area. Tell us about that race and your feelings about it, the course, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I love that race and I can't wait to go back. I was invited. I run for the team Luna Sandals. And so, as you know, the Rarámuri, the Tarahumara run in their homemade sandals made out of tires. And so my this company called Luna Sandals 12 years ago. And I never thought I would really be running ultras in sandals, but it feels so good and so free. And you do kind of have to tweak your stride and make sure you're landing on your midfoot and just have a good cadence. But it's so much fun to run in sandals. So he took the team. We went down there for 10 days. So as you know, it's a long trip down. So it was like a 21-hour ride in the shuttle bus. On the way, we stopped at a few places, and it was high altitude and sort of in the forest above the Copper Canyon. So it was a challenge, like running in that sort of terrain, because I live at sea level. So we got down into Yerike, and it was like raining, which was sort of rare for that area. Mm-hmm. And so we all volunteered. Kids, for 1,000 kids running these races, and they're so amazing. They're running barefoot, they're running in these like jelly sandals and just homemade sandals, and they're so happy. And that was amazing. I never seen a kids race like that. And then we got to sort of hang out and spend time with the Rarámuris. They had like a special dinner the night before the race, and there was just like a campfire, and they were like cooking some sort of cow or something. I'm a vegetarian, but just to see how they make their food, and just, they're such nice, calm, sweet people, like very shy. But I just knew a few of the runners from the book Born to Run, mm-hmm. like Emmanuel Luna and Arnolfo. And we got to really spend time with them and their families and take pictures and talk a little bit before. But the race was harder than I expected. It was really cool because they bring the run. There's random people along the way selling like Cokes and chips. And like if there's too far to go, like, because it was super hot. I don't know. You just feel cooked in the canyon, even though it rained the day before. The next day it was like extremely hot. And so I was just taking out my pesos and saying Coca-Cola pour, and it was amazing. Like that was really refreshing. I never done that during a race. Like you're running on a single track and you just like see random people. So this course was sort of like an out and back, and there are so many runners, and they actually run, the winners get money, and you also get wristbands along the way. To get, like at the end, you traded in for corn. And so I just gave my wristbands away to people at the end. I think you end up with like 8 wristbands or something like that. But it's a huge event. They go all out for it. And the course is beautiful. You cross bridges and water. And it was really, really challenging. It was a lot of fire road running, but then it turned into a single track with a lot of climbing. And there was actually like guys at the aid stations with, I guess you would call it like with rifles, just to make sure everything goes right. It felt pretty protected there as a runner, like nothing was going to go wrong.
How many gringos were running, and how far away did Mexican runners come from to participate?
Oh, well, like the Mexican runners, some traveled 3 days on foot just to come to the race with their families. And so they were all given like blankets and kind of like meal tickets and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That was amazing. And then the gringos was not that many, I think in the 20s, like 27 gringos. It wasn't, I was definitely one gringo girls. Like I would say maybe 4. There wasn't a lot, but they were so nice. Like I felt welcome, and I never felt in danger or like out of place.
That's an important thing I think to share with our listeners, because there's so much talk about danger in Mexico, and of course there is danger in Mexico. There's danger in the world, you know. we certainly have seen some danger in the States recently, and just terrible kind of stuff. But
yeah,
overall, because I live here and you, because you spent some time in an area that is considered maybe dangerous, that feeling of belonging and of safety really is way stronger than the potential danger that might happen no matter where you are.
Yeah, that was one of my concerns, because I do have a daughter and I want to be around for her. And so I felt safe because we rode in a shuttle bus with a Mexican driver, and they took really good care of us. And I never for a split second felt unsafe at all. Like it was just wonderful. Like I would want to bring my daughter there. It was just amazing to me.
Yeah.
Like magical. Yeah. We were doing ceremonies like at the camp we stayed at above the Copper Canyons. Mm-hmm. They were doing like a sweat lodge, and they were doing like ceremonies, like chanting and singing. And we just kind of got into it, and the food was amazing. Like everything was great.
Yeah, it's I'm so glad you did it, and I hope that people listening realize that that it's Mexico has as much diversity as the United States, and certainly being safe and feeling safe is something that most people, most tourists, that's their experience, not the opposite. Now, how do people actually apply? Like, if anybody from the United States wanted to run in that race, is there some way to apply, or is it by invitation or what?
You just go on ultrasignup.com, mm-hmm. and you just like search for the race Caballo Blanco 50 miler. And actually they just added a marathon distance last year, wow. which is the first time. So you just sign up and register. I don't know. It's probably $100 or something like that. And then they also added this October, they have another race in the Copper Canyons, and that's like 100 miler. And they have a shorter distance, and they have a stage race that's like a 5-day race. And I believe it's like something like a marathon a day for 5 days, but it's the same kind of thing. And you can go online, like an ultra sign up, and you can click on what it wants. Some of the packages include like your hotel and include your food, and other ones just include the race entry only. And mm-hmm. then you're just on your own for the rest of the time. Mm-hmm. So the website like pretty much has everything there. I believe it's called Copper Canyon Ultras.
Okay. Wow. That's exciting. Having lived in Mexico for over a year now, and having spent, you know, some time in Mexico before that, I would certainly recommend initially getting help with all of the details.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I would freak out if I had to do it on my own. With some of those roads, I mean, like once you get to, I don't know what it was called, Creel.
Uh-huh.
And then some of the roads past Creel were really like a dirt road, bumpy. Yeah. I would have no idea where I was going.
Right.
So it's much better to go, I would say, with someone that knows the area.
Yeah, yeah. Initially, don't just go for the budget stuff, but, you know, get some
exactly.
help. Then after that, figured it out, go on your own.
Yeah. And you can like fly into Eureka even, and you can take a train, I think from Chihuahua or some, maybe it's from Creel to Eureka. So it can be done easier than just like driving there.
Right. Right. Good
yeah.
advice. Now, I love Mexico, and I hope that lots of people are encouraged to try some of these races that Mexico offers. We actually have an ultra run here in Pozos where I live, and but it's only 50K. That's the longest. So maybe you can come sometime, Michelle, but it'll just be a piece of cake for you.
Oh, I love 50Ks. Yeah.
Well, it goes through some amazing history and is, anyway, we can talk about it a little more after the interview, because it would be really fun if you came and tried it out. Let's move on to Rockies and your father, because there's a connection there. And I know that you have done it many times. I don't know if you've done it every time with your father, or if he's done it and you haven't done it or whatever, but talk about the Trans Rockies race, because it's totally different than these other ones that we've been talking about, and how you got involved in it.
Okay. Initially, I was invited to run the Trans Rockies in the inaugural year, which was 2007. I ran for Team Solomon, and my Solomon manager asked me if I wanted to do it. And I had no idea like what this was about. I've never heard of a stage race. And so basically, Trans Rockies is a 6-day event, and you run 120 miles split in 6 days with 20,000 feet of vertical gain. But it's really nice. It's sort of a luxury vacation. Amazing food. They set up your tents for you. They have shower trucks. So it's not like you're just running one of these crazy races where you have to run with all of your gear on your back and then cook your own food and just be like really relying on yourself. So they take care of everything for you. You just have to run about 25 miles a day. And the course is really hard because you're running over the Colorado Rockies. And mm-hmm. I would say the lowest elevation is like, you start in Buena Vista, that's like 9,000 feet. And then you go up to Hope Pass, 12,000 feet. So for me living at sea level, that was very challenging. And so I ran the race a couple times. And then I told my dad, you could totally do this. The cutoffs are very generous. Mm-hmm. And I know he's capable of running that kind of distance. And so he did it and he loved it and just finished in the race 9 times. I didn't do it this year because I was racing in Canada, like a 100K run. So my dad also did the Trans Rockies of Canada, which is called Trans Selkirks. It's by the same organization. And you run through the mountains in Revelstoke, but it's 5 days and 100 miles. So it's a little bit shorter, but equally as beautiful and tough. Yeah. So Trans Rockies was sort of a transition, like a tradition for my dad and I would even bring my daughter out and she would volunteer and hang out. And all those guys, they put on just first class events. It's very well organized and it sells out every year, a lot of runners. So I've seen a lot of change since when I first ran it in 2007 to now, because the first year, I believe there was only 70 runners and now there's like 500.
Wow. Now your father is, he's 80 now, or is he older than that?
Turned 80 on March 28th and he ran 80 miles for his 80th birthday in 3 days. Yeah. So he's 80 and going strong.
Wow. And of course he must win most of the, you know, the age group events that he participates in, but he's getting some competition now, isn't he?
I know, it's crazy because the race yesterday run to the top, there was an 82-year-old and another 80-year-old, but they didn't make it the whole way up the mountain. Yeah. And my dad finished in 2 hours, 34 minutes, which is really good time. His goal is to always win his age group. But usually he's the only one in his age group.
Well, one of the complaints that I've had, and maybe it's changing now. I don't keep up with this stuff minute by minute, but the age categories, a lot of times, you know, it's 70 and older or something like that. And that's totally unfair for, you know, your father or other people who are in another decade and are having to that part, I hope that's changing. I think it's changing. I know it before it used to be like 60 or 65 and over. And so, you know, it's gotten up to at least 70, but let's hope that that the powers that be will look into increasing those age increments, because people are running and running strong well into their 80s and 90s. And of course, that's just going to keep getting higher and higher age-wise.
It's super true. And it's funny you brought that up, because my dad took months to petition to have this Mount Baldy race add an 80 and plus to compete with like the 65-year-olds. So they approved it. So this was the first year they had this age category.
Yay. Yeah. I'm really glad to hear that. Yeah, it's going to come around. It's kind of like letting women run the Boston Marathon and having the Olympics and, you know, a lot of these things. I mean, it's just like people haven't thought it through or haven't heard it enough from those of us out there participating. And once there's enough pressure, then let's hope that those changes will continue to happen. I have a question for you on shoes, because I think you run in pretty minimalist kind of shoes. Is that true?
That's very true. Yes. Yeah.
So talk about that, because that definitely is a controversy for a lot of us. And, you know, we really don't know what ultra distance type of shoes we might want to use. So tell us your opinion on this.
Well, I always sort of did my best racing in a minimal type of shoe, but it always had a slight heel lift. Mm. And now it seems like the trendy thing is to go with shoes that don't have that lift. Because once you have your heels lifted, it throws your whole posture out of alignment. And maybe people don't realize that. And, you know, their foot strike, like heel striking, and that creates problems. So once you go to a zero drop shoe and a shoe that gives you enough splay, like in your toe box, enough room, then that's just a lot more healthy. So I run primarily in Luna sandals. I live in California, so you're always sort of able to run in sandals. The weather is more conducive to that. But when I go racing, like in other locations like Canada, that would be sort of impossible to run in sandals. So I run in Vivo barefoot. London, and I've been with them since 2000, I would say 9 or 10.
Okay.
And so I run in a shoe called the Primus Trail Soft Ground. It's very, very grippy. It has no cushion and it's a zero drop, but it has plenty of room in the toe box. I would suggest if anyone was to get those, first start just walking around and living in them, like walk around and go do your errands, and then you can kind of get the feel. Even with Luna sandals, like just don't go from running in like a lifted cushion shoe to go running in Lunas, because you'll get injured, your calves will like explode and your Achilles might hurt. But so it took me quite a while to fully transition. It took me over a year. And now it just feels very awkward if I were to put my feet in a shoe with a lift. So I just think it's transition and taking away the lift, it makes your body, your feet, like your tendons just stronger. Because when you're surrounded in just like a very high cushion sort of cast, it just like, it makes you weaker. And I know people that have run in those type of shoes and they've actually broken their toes and their bones because their feet become weaker, like running those kind of miles that ultra runners run. So I think not everyone can do this sort of approach, because you do have to be technically sort of efficient with your form. You have to sort of increase your cadence to maybe like a 180 cadence and have like a light, quick sort of landing. Like if you've ever seen the Rara Marie's run, it's very like beautiful and quick and light and just flowy. So so you have to really be aware of your gait and just sort of relax your upper body. And it's at first, but then you kind of like, you will get it. But even if you have these Lunas or Vivos and incorporate it into your other running shoes, you know, you might just feel the benefits from it. But I really enjoy it. I wouldn't want to really run in any other type of shoe. So those work the best for me.
I think part of what you're saying is the transition time is really essential. And also that your body literally needs to be stronger overall. There has to be a strength in being able to lift your feet up and being able to, you know, get those quads and those hamstrings working, the muscles working, rather than relying at all on the shoes to give you really any assistance. Going up and down in these trail ultras, it's more body awareness and then actual body strength, I believe, than it is, trying to get your shoe to help you. Whereas on a lot of road races, you can actually use your shoe to make a big difference.
Oh, definitely agree. And if you even see the body types of like a fast road runner compared to a trail runner, like the mountain runners have an upper body and they're using their arms, like maybe they're using poles to get them up and over the huge climbs, and they look sort of like not so scrawny. They just look more overall muscular or fit. Yeah,
that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think you're right on there. Now, question about athletes. Are you a professional athlete? Is that something that is part of your work ethic?
Yes, and I also am a coach, and I've coached for like high school country. I've coached privately, and so and I have a lot of running sponsors too for over the past 15 years.
Who are some of those running sponsors that you have? And could you at least briefly say what it takes to, if someone's considering trying to get sponsored or to become professional, you know, what are some of the steps to make that happen?
Okay, sure. Well, some of my sponsors are Suunto. They're a GPS watch, and they're made in Finland. And so I use those at all my races. Leki poles. So I use the Leckie, they're like carbon fiber poles at more of the mountainous runs, steep terrain. I'm sponsored by Luna Sandals, Vivo Barefoot, Nathan Hydration Packs. Mm-hmm. So they make like handheld bottles and all kind of thing, waste packs for your hydration needs. I'm sponsored by Ink and Burn. They make clothing. I love their just shorts and jog bras and everything. They make cool designs. I'm sponsored by Squirrel's Nut Butter, and that's for anti-chafing, Exact Nutrition, Salt Stick, WAA Ultra, Dry Max Socks, Endura Elite, and Morton. So it's a lot of companies that sort of back me up. And one is looking to be an ambassador or be sponsored or a pro runner, I would say just like work very hard to start making yourself seen and maybe go to some of the bigger races and kind of place top three. Mm-hmm. And just sort of like, that's when I, like sponsors were approaching me. Like when I started winning a lot of races, like Solomon approached me and asked if I wanted to be on the team. And so I was getting emails, but also companies that I just love and use, I approach them and ask, mm-hmm. oh, hey, would you be interested? Let's say yes or no. But if you're turned down, just keep at it and maybe a different company. Well, and even nowadays with Instagram, companies love influencers. So it's a lot easy to be sort of like an ambassador of a product, or maybe they would give you a discount on product. Mm-hmm. As long as you have a lot of followers, like the whole world has changed in that realm where maybe now you don't have to win every race.
Yeah.
Or back in the day, like I had to sort of win everything to be noticed and stuff, because there was no Instagram and social media.
Yeah.
But yeah. But if you want to be pro, I would say you definitely have to go to the big races and make a splash somehow and just train really hard.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that's true. What is your training like these days? And what races do you have coming up in the next, 6 months to a year?
Well, I just did a couple races in Canada. I did my first bike race, is a 100 miler on the highest road in Canada called Highwood Pass. And that was really fun because I've never really done anything on the road bike before.
Wow.
And actually, the Trans Rockies, who put on the run you were talking about, they are the race directors for this race. They put on like half bike races, mountain uh-huh. bike, road races, uh-huh. and then they put on like running races. So any race they put on, you know it's going to be super beautiful, well-organized, just amazing. So I trust them, and it was so fun. I would do it again. And then I just did a race in Canada called the Iron Legs. Mm-hmm. And I did a 70K. It had 11,500 feet of climbing. Ooh. We ran through snow. Everything was up and down, nothing flat. We had to carry bear spray because it's grizzly country. And some of the runners and some of the sweepers had to drop out because they saw like bears with cubs and stuff like
wow.
that. So I just did those two races. I don't any next couple of months, but I'm going to apply to the race called UTMB, which is in Europe. Mm-hmm. You run through, it starts in Chamonix, France, and it's like a 100-mile race. They have different distances,
yeah,
like 100K and different. So I'd like to apply to that in December and see if I get in. And then I would also love to run the Moab 200-mile next October. And because I've never run past the Badwater distance, I would like to see what that's like. To just kind of, it's always a mystery. Like, oh well, I've run 100. I wonder what it's like to run 200.
Yeah.
Like, just like you wonder what it feels like and what the difference is and stuff like that. So now a bunch of my friends have already completed these 200 milers, and I'm sort of intrigued. It's not like I would do it on a regular basis, but maybe once or twice in my life.
Wow. Sounds great. I mean, you have to have things to keep you motivated. I know you're really dedicated to this, and I know you work out a lot on a regular basis, but having these major new goals to head for keeps you motivated, right?
Yeah, it really does. And I would say like, I know that my best racing is like at the 50K, 50 mile,
uh-huh.
maybe 100K. But since I've sort of done so many of those, like I kind of like to do the things I'm not great at because it's more of a challenge. Like even though I've won a 100 miler, I don't think I'm good at them. But I mean, it's just, there's more that can go wrong in 100 miler. So it kind of like is attractive to, you know, it's going to be a super mystery what's going to happen. And it's like living your life in one day, like all the ups and downs and all the problems you have to solve just to get to the finish line. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Now, have you dealt with hallucinations? Is that part of what's happened to you in some of your races, or is that a little bit longer before you get there?
No, people have gotten there definitely in even less than 100 milers, but I have not hallucinated. But I have seen, this is sort of common, like you see it running at night, half of these races are at night. So you see things that in the distance, like, oh my gosh, that's like a bear or that's like something. And it's not, and then you get closer and then it's like a log or something, but I've never hallucinated ever. I know some of my friends have, especially at the 200 milers. Cause I think with the no sleep or like very minimal sleep, like going into the third or fourth night, like my friends started seeing taco stands and Halloween candies and like all kinds of weird stuff. And
yeah, I've heard about that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to you when you, you get into these longer distances. Now, what about any kind of bucket list races that you really would like to do at some point in your life?
Well, I would say I have a bucket list adventure. Like I really, really, since my dad got me into Yosemite at a very young age, I really fell in love with the John Muir Trail. Uh-huh. So I really, really want to do that. Not really as a FKT or like my fast one to go and do like 20, 25 miles a day or something like just to enjoy it. And I just love, love, love that area. So that would be like an adventure. There's also like at the UTMB race, they also have a 200 miler and you run it with a partner and it's not really competitive. They don't really, it's cool because you can sleep in these refugios and they feed you and the course isn't marked. It just sounds more like a really cool adventure.
Yeah.
There's another race in Italy called Tour de Gens, through like four national, and that's another long one, 200 miler. That would be just like bucket list, like some ultimate thing you would only do once in your lifetime because it's expensive and it's very hard.
Right, right. And running with a partner, that sounds to me like that could be so great.
That's why I think I'm so in love with those Trans Rockies, because if you have the runner, it makes the experience so fun. And I've run it both ways where I have the wrong partner and then you have the right partner. And it's just really fun to like run with your best friend or it's so much fun. Yeah.
All right. Well, we are actually getting along in time here and we're going to be changing gears, but I want you to, let me know if there's anything else you want to add before we move into the final kick.
I just want to say if these distances feel daunting, just take it, break it down step by step. Like, I mean, my dad is 80 and he's just going for it. Like, I don't feel like we have any special talent. We're just sort of stubborn. I'm Polish and we're just like, we just sort of like, and I mean, I've learned everything sort of by trial and error. So like, you don't have to have a coach and you can just go out there and sign up and figure it out. Like, I know everyone has a different way of running ultras, like with their nutrition or with the gear they use and stuff, but just don't be afraid to just kind of go out there and figure it out. And the worst thing is maybe you won't finish the first time, but it's not the end of the world. Like some people take it too hard if they don't finish or something, but it's a learning experience. Like that's how I got better, is because I made failures and mistakes. And then you just learn and you get to see the most beautiful places also when running ultra marathons.
Do you need a crash course to help you train smarter, nail your nutrition, and improve your strength? Or maybe you want to connect with runners who get you. Check out the amazing running retreats offered by Runners Connect. Our 4- and 5-day retreats offer you an intimate, informative, relaxing, and amazing running experience that's also affordable. You'll get expert one-on-one coaching from our team of coaches, run in amazing places, get strength training, stretching, and yoga sessions, and meet other passionate runners just like you. We have a February retreat in Orlando, Florida, for those of you who need to get out of the cold and snow and get in a great block of training for your spring races. We also have two summer retreats that give you a respite from the heat and allow you to train on some of the most scenic trails in the world. The first retreat is in Flagstaff, Arizona, and the second is in Blowing Rock, North Carolina. Now, keep in mind, these retreats are not for elite runners. They are for runners like you who love running and just want to improve. Most of our attendees are between 40 and 70 years young and range in ability from Boston qualifiers to those looking to break 3 hours for the half marathon or those who are just getting started. To see dates, accommodations, prices, photos, and all the details, head to runnersconnect.net/retreats. We hope you're able to join us for one of these amazing retreats. Again, that's runnersconnect.net/retreats. Michelle, we're heading into the final kick. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready, Stephanie. Bring it on.
I hear my dog barking outside. I hope not everybody can't hear that.
Okay, so he's ready for the kick.
Yeah, he's ready for the kick. A favorite local run in your neighborhood?
Oh, my neighborhood, like within like 5 miles or something close?
Yeah, yeah. And remind us what your neighborhood is, because that was at the beginning of the interview.
Okay, my neighborhood is Laguna Niguel, California. It's in Orange County. So it's like a couple of miles away from the beach. Like people are familiar with Laguna Beach. It's near there. So I would say a favorite local training run of mine would to be running Aliso Wood Canyons. And a lot of mountain bikers ride there and you can run there. And it takes you on beautiful trails to like this place called the Dripping Cave. And at the top, it's called the top of the world. So it overlooks the ocean and Laguna Beach and it just has amazing views. And there's just, and you feel really safe in there because it's not really like deep wilderness. Although I have seen some bobcats and coyotes and different wildlife deer, but it's pretty much close to civilization and it's just really popular. You can get a lot of like good training. There's something for everyone because there's like gentle fire roads. There's very steep switchbacks. There's a trail that's really steep called Mentally Sensitive and it always breaks you like halfway up. But so, and there's beautiful cactus and flowers and it's a pretty area and it's really close by.
Nice. All right. So a recommended book, research, or video on your subject, ultra running, motivation, any of that kind of stuff.
Okay. For a video, I would say the video called Running on the Sun. It's a documentary about Badwater. And that's kind of how I got interested in running the race. For a book, I would say Chicken Soup for the Soul, Running for Good is good because it's like 101 short stories. Mm. And it's really inspirational and fun. Also, like any of Dean Karnazzi's books are always my favorite. Like his first book, Confessions of an All-Night Out. It's just like, it's changed people's lives. So if you have not read that, I strongly urge you to go out and pick up Dean Karnazzi's book. Because you will just want to go out and run all night after reading his stories. And you can get it on audiobook too.
Yeah, nice. All right. So you can listen to it while you're running.
Yes, you can. That's my favorite.
I know. That's terrific. Okay. And a person that you know and would recommend that our listeners might enjoy hearing from on this podcast.
Sure. I would recommend my dad, who's Geezer awesome. Doug Malowicki. He would be amazing. And also his training partner, Gordy Ainsley, who's just got a lot of history. He's been running these 100 miles since 1974 when he started running at the Western States 100. So either of them or them together would be amazing.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, if you can give me that contact information after we finish
sure.
the interview, that would be great. So we are running out of time, but the final question here is how can people learn more about you and stay in touch with you?
Sure, of course. I'm on Instagram at Michelle M. Barton, and I'm on Facebook. I have an athlete page. It's Michelle Barton, and I'm on Strava if you want to follow my training. I do a lot of run, bike, and swimming. I just don't only do running because I think it keeps me more injury-free to incorporate different sports, and that's Michelle Barton. So everything is pretty much just my name, Michelle Barton. That's how you can follow my pictures and adventures, runs, and races.
All right, Michelle. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. What a fun
pleasure,
talk.
Stephanie. I know I want to go back to Mexico.
I know. I'm going to let you know how to get in touch with me because this Ultra Pozos that we have is it's at the end of September, and maybe not this year, but maybe next year. Who knows? I mean, you're welcome to come anytime.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you. So you have been listening to Michelle Barton, who has shared some of her experiences running some of the toughest races in the world. Thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. Follow us at the Runners Connect Winner's Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB. And please subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. You'll be notified every week when the new episode is published. And thank you, each of you, for listening. We'll be back next week with another super interview to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top, wishing you a great week of running.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.